issue here is specialization. So I look at creation always at a holistical approach. So I start from the end. So what is the goal? What do we need to create? And when I talk about then specialization, it's different for each market that I work with. When you create digital fashion, it's different processes and tools and artists and technologies that are used to create that 3D content. And then as compared to furniture creation or footwear or anything else. So I always start from the end. So for example, when I work with companies, I look at the sales forecast. So I talk to the sales team and try and understand what is their forecast looking forward each quarter, because then I work back and I always want to make sure that you don't over deliver or under deliver. Because
the Digital to Learn podcast is dedicated to exploring both what's new and what's good in the use of technology in teaching and learning.
Our mission is to have the best minds sitting in front of our microphones, sharing evidence-based strategies for digital teaching and learning.
Digital to Learn is brought to you by the Center for Learning and Innovation at Indiana Wesleyan University.
Thank you for joining us. And now, the Digital to Learn podcast.
Welcome to the Digital to Learn podcast. I'm Tiffany Snyder, and I'm here with my co-host, Brad Garner. Hey, Brad.
Hey, how are you, Tiffany?
I'm doing well, and I'm mostly just excited to jump back into our conversation from last week. We are welcoming back to the show Ofer Rubin. It's great to have you here.
Happy to be here again.
If you didn't get a chance to catch last week's episode, we encourage you to go back and take a listen. Otherwise, we're going to keep the conversation going. Educational institutions or universities can be leaning into these conversations about XR, VR, 3D. How can they prepare their students for this type of future? And in some cases, these universities are teaching students on site, and sometimes they're teaching them online, and sometimes it's a mix of both in a hybrid situation. But in any case, what do you think is the role of the university in navigating this new world?
So I think these technical advances will be everywhere. So universities, I view them as being the first that should lead and engage and explore them. IBM recently reported that technical skill set have a shelf life of around 2.5 years. So every 5 years, technical skill that was learned is no longer valid. That's pretty amazing. And it's probably getting shorter. I'm thinking about my own personal learning. When I was learning industrial design, what was really interesting, of course, all the tools that I used back then are not used anymore. I had to keep learning new tools all the time. But what did teach me the most is that I remember somewhere around the second year, I could see. And what I mean by that is that suddenly I felt like I can finally see another level that was around me that I couldn't before that. So school taught me how to look at stuff, right? How to understand design, how everything works. And that's something that's above any technology or any tool that I could learn, because it's something that if I do business, if I do say, if I talk to the sales, everything that I touch, I have a new ability to look at more creatively, right? So I think that's really important. So again, so the tools are going to change very quickly. The technology is going to change. Again, every skill will depend on the previous one. And I think we need to develop not just a tech literacy, but an XR literacy. I think the main two issues to consider and think about is, the first one is maybe how tech will help improve the learning experience itself within the university for the students right now. So how do you change the way students learn, right? Because this is something, and I know for school, we have the same ways of learning for many years. So how do you change the education system? And then the second one is, how do you use these new technologies to help students in actual jobs later in real life, creating maybe flexible courses, maybe standalone, maybe you create short courses that can be switched and taken out or added in, so they're not dependent on something that the student learned maybe 2 or 3 years ago. That's many things to think about, but it's like changing the mindset. How to create content quickly. So developing ways of doing that. New technologies maybe that evolve and might help new types of jobs. So I know about eye tracking. It's something that is only in development, but the Apple Vision Pro and the MetaQuest 3 track your eyes. How can you use that for learning or for new jobs or new to help improve? What about haptics, which is wearable gloves, wearable bodysuits, right? And of course, XR. And when I think about future jobs, I think they'll include much more data analysis and quality assurance. So again, I'll explain what I mean, because we see that AI and many jobs are slowly will go away, right? So instead of having 10 or 100 people, you'll have fewer people doing that job. And that person will have to do more data analysis and the quality and the ethics of AI and digital twins. I think that's really important. That's something also that I already encountered lately. And then lastly, maybe is how do the universities include these to improve maybe the grading system or the teaching process? Is it hybrid? Is it something else? The learning tools, right? We had books, we have online, maybe using the peripherals and mobiles and headsets and data analytics. And of course, I think really important is collaboration. That's something in every company that I worked with, you always work with other teams. So I worked with developers. I had to know how to work with the sales teams, with creative teams, with management. Everyone just goes up. I think you were a 3D artist and now you become an art director. So you have to learn how to collaborate a lot more.
So one of the challenges we face is scalability. So we, let's say, decide to take a course and infuse VR, XR, all those things into the course. It works well. Students like it. But in that pilot, there are only 15 students. And we've got hundreds of courses and thousands of students. So how do we scale up from a pilot?
The biggest challenge that I encountered is how do you scale the 3D assets? And again, think about it. You have to create the whole world virtually. So you have to create all those digital fashion and furniture. And it's a huge challenge. I think slowly, it's still most of it is manual. And I think the issue here is specialization. So I look at creation always at a holistical approach. So I start from the end. So what is the goal? What do we need to create? And when I talk about then specialization, it's different for each market that I work with. When you create digital fashion, it's different processes and tools and artists and technologies that are used to create that 3D content. And then as compared to furniture creation or footwear or anything else. So I always start from the end. So for example, when I work with companies, I look at the sales forecast. So I talk to the sales team and try and understand what is their forecast looking forward each quarter, because then I work back and I always want to make sure that you don't underdeliver, because that's how I deal with that. That's a little bit regarding the content creation in the 3D. And then I think creating new user interfaces for XR, it's new technologies, right? So just 10 or 15 years ago, before the smartphones, we didn't know what we need to create. So once the smartphone came, we had to create new touch and swap. And we didn't have that because we didn't have those technologies. So once XR and all these headsets come in, we have to create new ways to interact with those. And I think we'll have to think about how we create new user experience to improve the current in education and in the daily tasks that we use in different work and for leisure. So it's creating, again, new tools to use. It's exactly the stuff that I help companies with. If I compare it to what I do, which is 3D content creation, and 20 years ago or so, it was very difficult to find someone that can create high quality 3D assets, right? Today, that's not a problem. You've got all these great studios in India, in Ukraine, all over the world that can create amazing looking content. And the question is, how do you scale that? So how for a company, how do they make 1,000 or 10,000 or 100,000 furniture objects a month, right? And that's, I think, again, it connects to the to what we talked about before. So I think it's beginning with the end in mind. So you make sure that the supply and demand is will fit what the goal is. And again, when I talk to companies, it's talking to the sales teams and understanding, like I said, the sales forecast. Universities, I think, will have to figure out what the goal is and then work backwards and set parameters to reach them. So when I work with companies and I worked with different businesses, so furniture and fashion and luxury and different 3D platforms, when you look at it from outside, it looks like everything is the same. Everything is 3D. But when you actually look in each market, it's different, right? So when you create digital fashion, you have different tools and you have different skilled artists to create those. And you have different sales teams. So you have to specialize. So again, it's breaking up each one, each market. And I think same in education. So first of all, looking down to the different details. So I think universities should break up each part, and each part would probably be each major or curriculum, right? Because not all of them need the same solutions. So I'm thinking about probably if you study medicine, it would not be the same as studying architecture or law or something like that, right? So I actually did a few years ago work on a project that was developing an XR tool to help students train in surgery. So we had to really dig in. It was so different than anything I did before, right? So everything I did helped me understand the processes, because process and is the same, but when you dig into the details, the 3D assets are different. The haptics are different. The way they collaborate is totally different. How is the UI designed to make sure that all of these students from all around the world can log in and see their teacher, professor, show how to do a surgery. So it's going to be a lot different than any other major. So that's regarding the different majors, and also probably analyze each of the other education processes, which is maybe, I know, grading, creating the courses, maybe AI can help with that, software and tools, the processes and the integrations, and again, the peripherals and the devices. So deciding if a class needs to use headset, if that will add value or not, or just let's keep with the desktop and online solutions. So I think that's about it.
Very good.
It's very helpful. It's encouraging to know it's not all or nothing. So if university administrators, course designers want to move into this space, they have options with the technology and with the particular major. It sounds more like a continuum than anything, examining what resources do we have, how much time and effort can we put forward, and what do our students want? What are the students of tomorrow going to want? So there's just a lot of questions and processing to be had, but there are options. The horizon of 3D and XR can be daunting to grasp. What do you feel are the most misunderstood aspects of those technologies?
Okay, so this is a great question because I really feel this is misunderstood. So the answer is adding value. And what I mean by that, and the short answer is not copying the real world. Okay, so creating experiences that add value that is not possible in the real world. And I think 2 years ago, when metaverse was a hype word and everyone was creating these metaverse worlds, they all pretty much sucked. I know if I can use this word, but because 90% of them, and I don't know if you try them, you just walk around empty spaces that looked like 3D did 20 years ago. And there was nothing to do there. It was just let's create a world and people will come on it and then we'll try to do something. So many companies were approaching me to help them create these worlds. But, and then, you know, so I remember even back in around 2000, there was VRML. So that was like a 3D streaming language tool. And it was just coming in, and then people were talking about, okay, so in the future, there's going to be you're going to do your shopping on a virtual store. So you would walk around, you would push your the cart on the aisle, you would move to the right. Again, this was not with a headset, but just on your laptop or your computer. But you would pick up whatever you need, you put it in the cart, and then you go to the checkout. And I was thinking, why would I want to do that? I mean, if I want to be in a virtual world, I want to fly. I want to be Spider-Man. I want to shoot stuff. I want to be, you know, I want to have, you know, exciting stuff that I can do in real life. And then on the other hand, if I want to do my shopping, you know, grocery shopping, I come home, I just want to get it done, right? I just want this list with check marks and get it shipped immediately. And I think that was stuff that 20 years ago people were talking about. And then 2 years ago, they were starting talking about that again, and it didn't make sense. So adding value is so important, right? I went to this online conventions 2 years ago, virtual online conventions. And then you walk a long time until you get to the stage. And then on the stage, you see the speakers, but they're very low quality 3D avatars that are barely moving. And after a few minutes, it was really interesting. I mean, what they said, but it was not interesting to see that. So I just, you know, put it on the back and did other stuff while listening to that. So actually, it became like a radio. So instead of moving forward to make more interactive experiences, it became like a radio, which it doesn't make sense, right? So it lowers the value. So I think, again, the fact that you can create something or do something is not enough. And I think this all relates back to what we talked about, story and content, right? You have to add value that doesn't exist in the real world, because why would I want to copy the real world? It's an amazing world we've got, right? I can go swimming in the open sea. I don't want to do it, you know, with an XR. Maybe a few years from now, where I'll wear the haptics and I will feel the water on my body and everything, and it could be a similar experience. But I mean, right now it's very far from that. And if I relate that to education, I think education should be the same. So it needs to create new and better interactions and experiences using these tools. So not just copying, but either, you know, the value could be making it easier to learn, quicker to understand, getting more stuff done, helping the teachers, right? Grade more, analyze the students more. How do you add more value by these technologies? And again, these are just tools. The tools are not important. What is important is creating the content and understanding how you add value.
And then you have to deal with people like this, right?
That's a great idea. But I'm afraid my son would be a lot better than me at moving around and shooting the stuff, and he wouldn't get the stuff that I need. So I'm not sure it will. Yeah. So right now I'm thinking about my answer, and I believe it's going to happen. And so it's not playing it safe, but I think that's the way technology works. And I think scaling the adoption of XR, I think that's what needs to happen. And if I think about how to get there, again, if we scale the adoption of XR, it will speed up the development of more 3D and more AI and more headsets, will create more engaging educational experiences that don't exist in the real world. So I think that's the goal, to enable more and better XR experiences. And we're just at the beginning. Now, I think to make this happen, we need millions of people to adopt it, right? Making it mainstream. Because once you have millions of people buying headsets, it would make sense for developers to develop more applications to those headsets and lowering creation costs and all that. So it's like a chicken and the egg story. And I think back, it's the iPhone was able to scale the App Store only after they reached the mass adoption of the iPhone. So I think that's the goal. And again, mass adoption of XR will change, and we're not there yet. And I'll add just one more thing. I think in order to get there, we need to make the headsets small, cool, wearable. So not the Google Glass that a few years ago came out, and maybe it was good enough, but it wasn't cool. People didn't want to wear it. Now we're talking about stuff that you have to put on your face. So until that happens, that's a hardware problem, right? That you can walk anywhere with it. And then if someone wears it all the time, you can start thinking about all these experiences that you can develop and make it a lot more interesting to you. So it's, again, it's doing both at the same time. It's not easy. But you said it'll come true, so I'm optimistic.
That's what we're thinking. There's no problem now. You've waved the wand. We're all good. All the jobs you've created.
Right. Yeah, too. I really hope. I think it's going to be an amazing and exciting with everything that's happening in the past few years. It's moving faster and faster. I can't even imagine 10 years from now. I can't even imagine 5 years from now, because things are changing so rapidly. It's crazy times, definitely.
5 years from now, we do hope to have you back on the podcast. Make that note, please. We might not be meeting on a platform like this, though. I'll go ahead and tell our listeners. We started out on using Zoom to connect with our conferencing, to connect with our guests. We're now using a tool called Squadcast to connect with our guests. And who knows where we'll be next year versus 5 years from now for these podcasts. So
right. But again, these are just the tools, right?
They are.
You guys are the same. The content is what's important. These are just the tools that deliver it. And I really enjoyed being on the podcast. I think for myself, it was really interesting, because right now I'm thinking about it and everything like connects back to the beginning when I talked about tools and sculpting and 3D. Everything is connecting. So really interesting.
It is. Yep. Thank you, Ofer. And to all of our listeners, we're going to provide links for you. So in the show notes, please be sure to check those out. Also, to our listeners, please be sure to refer to the show notes for links and connect with Ofer. Stay tuned with what he's up to in his career. We're really excited about the work that he does and feel grateful that we were able to feature him on the Digital to Learn podcast. We'll be back next week with a new guest and a new topic. We'll see you.
Thank you for joining us on Digital to Learn.
If you enjoyed this podcast, there are three things we ask you to do. One, come back and join us again. Two, tell your friends about us. And three, give us a positive ranking on your favorite podcast platform.
Digital to Learn is brought to you by the Center for Learning and Innovation at Indiana Wesleyan University.
Embrace the future.
Always keep learning.